This is A New Angle, and I'm your host, Justin Angle, marketing professor at the University of Montana. This podcast is my chance to speak with cool people doing awesome things in and around the great state of Montana. This show is proudly presented by First Security Bank and Blackfoot Communications. Hey, welcome back. Thanks for tuning in today. Special episode for you today. We're going to re-air portions of our conversation with Senator Tester, Congressman Gianforte, and economist Bryce Ward, talking about funding for higher education and the value of the 6 mil levy. Before we get into that, though, I got the chance to catch up with some of the student leaders here at the University of Montana, Alex Butler and Mariah Welch. They're the president and vice president of the Associated Students of the University of Montana, their student senate, basically. And they have some incredible wisdom about their experience here as students and are just a testament to the power of education in two young lives. So we'll turn it over to Alex and Mariah. Okay, so here today with Alex Butler and Mariah Welch. Guys, thanks for coming on the podcast.
Yeah, thank you for having
us. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, so you are the two student leaders of our Associated Students of University of Montana. That's what ASUM stands for, right?
Yep.
Yeah, Alex, you're the president. Mariah, you're the vice president. I remember, gosh, you know, it was probably last spring, the two of you came and visited a class of ours, mm-hmm. a class I teach with Professor Sarah Rinfrey, and you came and sort of laid out your candidacy, and it was just amazing. You guys were great candidates for our leadership here. So thank you. Thank you for your service to this campus.
Thank you so much, and thanks for having us. We're really excited to be here to talk about 6 mil and talk about some student stuff on campus.
Yeah, you guys have been out there actively kind of trying to drum up support for the 6 mil levy. And we're recording this as sort of a new introduction to our discussion of the 6 mil levy. I couldn't help but notice, I was at the pep rally Friday night, and you know, you two presented yourselves in such a way that I think was such a great selling point for higher education, the UM education. And so can you remember that? I mean, it's a distant memory where we're catching you right after homecoming. Mm-hmm. But Alex, you presented yourself as kind of a less of a traditional student, more of a bookworm, kind of approaching homecoming in a different way. Like, bring us back to that moment a little bit.
Yeah, so you know, Mariah wrote that script up, and it's and you know, kind of lays out the you know, dichotomy between both of us.
Yeah,
and yeah, I was that student. I actually remember walking on campus during whatever home game it was, and I'd have to park way off campus, or you know, try and sneak onto a parking lot because games be going on, and because I would go to the library. And I also played rugby for the men's club here,
uh-huh.
and a lot of our games were on Saturdays, and some of them would be for the games, so I never went to a lot of them. But yeah, for the most part, I was usually at the library on those days, and would see everybody pouring out from the games and just be studying and really not even know who they're playing.
Doing the work of a student.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Mariah, your perspective is a little different.
It's a little different. I mean, I was still doing the work of a student, but not on Saturdays.
Yeah.
Those have been my Grizz game days. So I'm definitely more of your traditional student freshman year, leaving my dorm room, being all excited with all the face paint on, ready to go watch the Grizz win. So yeah, we definitely are just the two different sides of what our university is and how students are, but still really care about this education.
Well, and that, yeah, and there's so much to that. There's so many layers. Mm-hmm. It's not just one student type versus the other. Mm-hmm. And the two of you represent, you know, all the students here, but also through your unique background. So maybe talk a little bit about like what this experience here at the University of Montana has meant to the two of you. Mariah, you want to lead off on that?
Yeah, so I think that I just look back at going into college and coming fresh out of high school, and I was so nervous to really get into my classes, didn't really know what I was going to do. And so being at the University of Montana and being in my classes has just like opened my perspective on the world. I felt like I was really tunnel driven into going to law school, which I still want to go to law school. But the education I've got here has really opened my eyes to a lot of different issues, whether it's on campus in our state or across our country as well. So I think the education I've gotten here has just opened my mind and opened my eyes. And it's really made me understand a lot of different perspectives that people come from. And I mean, I'm not the type of person to jump into a biology class or a chemistry class, but being here has really made me recognize the importance of those classes and recognize the importance of the students who are studying those and want to go into those fields. So UM has impacted my life, and I can't even express how much it has impacted my life just because it's opened my mind so much.
opening your mind. Alex, probably done some similar things for you too, right?
Yeah, so that's actually a interesting question, because I was talking about that today with another senator about gen eds, right? Like that conversation about, you know, UM core, and we're kind of relooking at gen eds and what that means. And we were talking about that, about what are we trying to get out of that gen ed program, and not just gen ed, but, you know, out of degree here from UM. You know, and it's not, I feel like coming here, I haven't learned a lot in the sense of I've understood all these concepts. I've learned more about history. Like, it can lay out definitions and dates and things like that that I've learned. And those are important. But I think more so it's taught me how to learn, what to think about, how to think about certain issues, how best to go about studying certain problems that we are facing in the world. And so I don't know if I'm, you know, leaving with, I really probably can't list off all the things that I've learned, but I've sort of, you know, sparked a flame of wanting to learn more, and I have a better understanding of how I want to go about learning and asking the right questions. And I think that's the big takeaway I'm leaving with here at UM.
Absolutely. Asking the right questions. Yeah. I mean, at the heart of it, like, as a faculty member, that is music to my ears. You know, the lists of facts and figures and formulas and all that. I mean, that's, you're going to forget about that by the time the exam's over, probably, or 5 minutes after it's over. But really learning how to be a lifelong learner and a lifelong student is the power of what a, you know, higher education experience can bring. And I would argue that it's part of what the in-person experience could bring. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're trying to simulate a lot of what we do in an online context, and those are important delivery mechanisms. We don't need to get too into that. Mm-hmm. But speak a little bit about not only the sort of perspective shift that you've experienced here, but also something about the place. Like, what does this place mean to you, being here with your fellow students in this particular geography?
Well, I could say for the place, obviously, Missoula, and I think even the state has is very environmentally conscious. We think about the environment in a lot of different ways, not just in saving it, but in working with it and being sustainable. And sure, that is certainly something I never thought of prior to living here, whether it was growing up in South Dakota or living in Georgia. I honestly never thought about that. But here's definitely a place where there is this interesting mesh of people who are sustainably minded farmers, ranchers, hunters, and people that just want to live in a more sustainable world. And that's certainly something place-wise that I would never have thought about prior to being in this location, where I think if I would have gone to other places I got accepted to, I would not have been thinking about these issues in that way. Mm-hmm. And so certainly Montana, especially Missoula, has opened my eyes to those conversations and issues and problems in a way that I would never have received otherwise.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting. Mariah, any thoughts from you?
Yeah. So, I mean, I grew up in Montana, so those are things that I've
always... What's your hometown?
I'm from Billings.
That's right.
Oh, yeah. Just a little bit of ways. But I think that I love Montana, and that's why I decided to stay here for school. And coming to Missoula, I just have realized what a community we have. Like, sure, our community supports our students. Our students support each other, our faculty, our staff. Everyone supports our students, and that is just... that's amazing for me to recognize that every student that's going to come to the University of Montana or come to Missoula is going to feel like they have a place here. And if they're not, someone's going to make sure that they do. So I think that the community of Missoula and the community of UM is what makes this place so special. And that's why I love it. And that's why I decided to come here for school.
Fantastic. And so I just want to ask one last question, because you guys have been out and about trying to drum up support for the 6 mil levy. And this is a setup to a long form discussion of the 6 mil levy. We're going to hear from Senator Tester, Congressman Gianforte, and then economist Bryce Ward. But before we hear from them, tell us, well, we got to thread the needle here. Like, I can't be beating the drum for the 6 mil levy, but we can encourage people to vote. Mm-hmm. So in your role as student leaders here, make the case for voting. Why should students get out there and vote?
Well, I think people should vote because this is a way for people to directly support or choose not to support higher education in the state of Montana. And, you know, sometimes we get a little disconnected with the legislative session. We really don't know what's going on there. It can be kind of confusing. There's a lot going on, but this is a way for people to have a direct say in funding higher education and how it impacts students from the state of Montana, from out of state, and what they do to support the communities they want to go work in. And I think that's a really unique opportunity. That's something that shouldn't be taken lightly. And I think the conversations we're having around it should be difficult. Though I hope we all come to the same conclusion that we should support it. But it really drives home the point that higher education is important to the state. And I like that we have to have these hard conversations about it.
Absolutely.
And I think the importance is that of getting students to vote is that it's not very often that you see something on the ballot that you think, wow, that directly impacts me. But
sure.
This impacts every single student in the Montana university system. So I think selfishly, I vote because I know it impacts me and I know that others do the same. So if that's your reason for voting, that's great. Like, higher education benefits our economy. It benefits our state and our workforce as a whole. So if you believe in those things, super important for you to get out there and vote in November and be voting on the 6 mill levy.
Excellent. Well said. Guys, thanks for stopping by the podcast, sharing some of your time and wisdom with us. And more broadly, just thank you for not only your service to the university, but the attitude that you bring to it. You're so positive and jazzed about how awesome this place is. And that type of positivity and energy is what we need right now. So thanks very much.
Thank you so much, Justin. We appreciate it.
So anyway, important issue. I'm excited to bring you this sort of threesome of guests. Their voices are different, but very powerful on this issue. And first, we'll turn it over to Senator John Tester. So first of all, thank you, Senator, for coming on the podcast. We're excited to have you. We're producing an episode on public education and the importance of funding public education in the state of Montana, with a focus on the 6 mill levy vote. And just wanted to kind of get into your history in public education. I mean, you've been a huge supporter of public education for many years and went to bat for us in a big way with the Upward Bound scholarship issue last year. Can you maybe speak about that?
Yeah, I sure can. I'm going to back up a little bit because I think we are who we are today. Much of the influence is by our parents and in my case, my grandparents, even though they died when I was very, very young. But my mother, who is a child of the Depression, born in 1920, had two sisters and a brother. And my grandparents, this was in the 30s, felt that it was very, very important that those girls went to college and got a college degree. And this was in the 1930s. And in fact, all three of them did, and were all teachers at one point in time or another. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to tell you that perspective went through my parents and I've got two older brothers, and they both went to college, and part of the reason they ended up being successful in life is because of that experience.
Sure.
In higher education. And I would tell you that I wouldn't be here today as a United States Senator from the state of Montana had I not went out and got a bachelor's of science in music. I think it's very, very important in building the whole person. And so because of that input, not only did I go to college, but I taught for a couple years, and then I served on the school board for 9 years. And I'm going to tell you that I saw firsthand the importance of good classroom teachers and the importance of the teacher and making sure facilities were up to snuff. And so the learning environment was appropriately creative, and also saw the importance that everybody in the school system made, whether it was the custodian or the school secretary, or there was a superintendent or the principal, but most importantly, that teacher that was in the classroom and those kids, mm-hmm. As they came in, making sure that they were not hungry, not sick, and be able to move forward. So when I'm looking at policies here in Washington, D.C., that's what I view it on. I was told at a very young age, and I believe this to my core, that public education is one of the reasons our democracy has flourished for the last 200 years or survived for the last 200 years, however you want to look at it. And so we need to, we need to support that. So whether it's a TRIO program, which helps first generation college kids graduate, that was denied because of a technicality in Washington, D.C., of Secretary DeVos, and we raised some heck about that, and actually introduced bills that would limit her budget if she didn't really wake up to the fact that this was a good program that worked very, very well for 50 years, and put enough pressure where she was able to reverse her decision. But the truth is what she did is she just made the right decision, because it was ridiculous to throw out a application because of one page, I think, out of like 50 was single space instead of double space. And when they talk about draining the swamp, holy mackerel. So when it comes to issues, whether it's TRIO or whether it's making sure that we have college affordability and make sure there's Pell grants there and those kind of low interest loans available, or whether it's the 6 mil levy, I am going to continue to support public education, higher education, because I think our economy depends on it and our democracy depends on it.
And we have, along those lines, we have a new president here at the University of Montana with a really interesting leadership background. And he has been speaking a lot on the importance or the role of higher education in producing future leaders. Can you speak a little bit to that and the importance of developing leaders at our institutes of higher learning?
Yeah, I think it's one of the real key takeaways, even though oftentimes as a student you go to learn about, in my case, music or maybe history, or you learn to be a research or whatever it may be. But one of the side benefits I think is very important is we develop leaders. And I think we develop them on a couple different fronts. I think teaching kids how to think critically is really important. And I don't think that's something that comes about by accident. I think it's something that is instilled upon kids by their parents and by their teachers and further instilled in higher education. And I think that critical thinking is a foundational element to leadership. To be able to sort through the baloney, so to speak, and get to the issues that are really important, and be able to sort through, especially in this day and age, the vast amount of information we get, to try to get down to what is real and what is fake is really, really, really important. And I think at the university level, you have the ability to be able to try to emphasize those things. And sometimes it's not even done intentionally, but most of the time it is, to be able to teach kids, to be able to sort, young adults, I should say, to be able to sort through the information and to be able to think through it and be able to determine what's important and what is not. And so, and I think that leadership is very, very important, not only in government, but also in business and also in your family. And I think it's one of the things that helps move our country forward and quite frankly, make us the greatest country in the world. And that is why when we talk about education pricing or the cost of education pricing kids out of the ability to go to college and get a higher education degree, I think those impacts, even though they're felt in business and even though they're felt in the number of entrepreneurs that are out there, you know, taking chances and moving the ball forward in our economy, it's also felt in leadership. And, you know, I just think that, you know, as we look at the whole picture of higher education, oftentimes we forget about the leadership component. And I think it's inherent to our educational process. And as far as the president of the university goes, I think that his background is a bit unconventional to be a president of a university. But I think he brings qualities of leadership and qualities of higher education that I think the University of Montana needs right now. And I look forward to working with him, and I look forward to him having a very successful tenure at the University of Montana.
Yeah, certainly interesting times. And speaking to that point about critical thinking and the importance of sort of sorting through the baloney and, you know, what's true and what's not, you know, it's a changing news environment. It's a changing business environment, and we have to change as a university. And do you have any thoughts on how we can do a better job of responding to the market demands?
Well, I think that, first of all, we've got two ears and one mouth. We need to act accordingly. And I think listening to Main Street businesses, listening to the tech community, listening to the folks that are in manufacturing is critically important as a higher education unit. I think it's very, very, very important. And to be able to touch base with the folks and be able to get the facts on what's important to them, to be able to sustain and move economy forward is, I think it's really important to be able to listen to employers to find out what their needs are as far as a skilled workforce go, to be able to make sure that the university is flexible in training programs so that they can meet the needs of the business community with a skilled workforce is really important. And then, of course, what I consider a staple of a four-year university is those entrepreneurs out there, and making sure that we get those folks experience both in the classroom, out in the community, is really important. And then the other issue, Justin, is being able to vision forward, which is really, really tough. You know, we have been going along in a flat line for a long time. I mean, mm-hmm. We're walking, and then we got horses, and then we got cars, and then we've got jet planes. And now it's like we're moving at the speed of light. Thing is changing so fast. And the university has to look out, whether it's a professor in the classroom or whether it's leadership at the top, they have to look out and say, you know, this is what we think is going to be happening 10 or 20 years from now. And this is the direction we're going to push our university. And that's very, very difficult because we don't know. I mean, I can tell you that I don't know what my grandkids are going to be doing at the age of 60. They probably will have had multiple jobs at that point in time. They will probably have been trained and retrained. Hopefully they will go to college and have a good foundation to set up that training and retraining. But in the end, the universities that are going to be successful, the units of higher education that are going to be successful, are the ones that do the best ability to see what job opportunities and what business opportunities are going to be out there into the future.
So that dovetails exactly with what you said previously about critical thinking, creativity, and experiential learning. And one thing I think about a lot in the classroom, and it must be on your mind at times, is how to keep students engaged and to prevent them from becoming cynical. The last election season, I just had so many students that didn't want to talk about it. They were cynical. They were disengaging from the process. And how do we combat that?
Well, I think part of it is to understand why they don't want to talk about it, and to understand why they've become cynical, and try to address that. Mm-hmm. This is a fact, and I've said it to just about every group that I've met with under the age of 35, and that is that their perceptions of the world and their view of the world is solid, and they need to be involved. And if they're involved, the democracy works much, much better. As a policymaker, I need to listen to everybody, and that means including the folks who are in college or just out of college and struggling to make a living. And we need to listen to them, and we need to take their information that they're giving and put it into the mix as far as the policies we deal with back here in Washington, D.C., or at the state level, or the county level, or the municipality level, whatever it might be. But in order for that to happen, they have to be involved. So they have to understand that their opinion matters and that they can make a difference. Right. I met with a bunch of high school kids from Helena last week or 2 weeks ago on the issue of safety in schools. And one of the students kept saying, well, I'm just a high school kid. You know, this is my opinion, but I'm just a high school kid. And my point to her was, don't devalue yourself. Your opinion is just as valuable as mine or my aunt and uncles or my brothers and sisters or my cousins or anybody. So don't devalue that. Know that perception, even though they may not have as much life experience because they're not as old as other people are, they have access to more information today than I ever did at that age. And these guys read, and they read, and they read some more, and they're up on this stuff. And I would tell you that the issues that they think are important, I'm talking about the college kids in particular, are issues that truly are important. So they need to know that there are people out there listening to them, and that they just need to make sure that their voice isn't going to get heard by, sitting in the student lounge and drinking coffee. That's where you develop your thoughts. That's where you do your reasoning. That's where you do your research, and then export that information that you found, whether it's on the internet or in the newspaper or wherever it might be. But they need to know. Look, it's always been a problem. It was a problem in my generation. When I was 18, 21, didn't vote, weren't engaged. Oftentimes, these folks are trying to get educated, trying to make a living. They don't have a lot of time to to fool around. But today it's so easy to contact your elected representatives. And I would just encourage them that if in fact, you're inclined to do this, please do it, because your input's very, very, very important. And, you know, I served with two legislators right out of high school, and they were darn good. One was a Democrat, one was a Republican, John Brueggemann out of Polson and Jesse Lazovich out of Anaconda. Two of the best legislators I ever served with, and they were the youngest members of the body. Hmm. We've got a young gentleman in this legislature right now by the name of Jacob Bachmeier out of Haver. Smart kid. Incredible asset, I think, to the caucus there in Helena. And I would just encourage folks, especially in this day of term limits in Montana, to get involved, run for office, make a difference, because your opinion counts.
So along those lines of involvement, if I can sneak in one last question, we need students to be involved to help us get through a pretty major ballot initiative coming up in the fall, and that's the 6 mil levy. Critical funding mechanism for higher education. It's been renewed every year, every 10 years yep. since 1948. You're an expert campaigner. How do we do a better job as an institution making a case for this?
Well, I would just say this. First of all, you've got to tell the story. And I think the story that's going on right now at this moment in time of this generation mm-hmm. is we're not doing right by them. I always give the example when my older brothers went to college. My oldest brother could work a summer driving truck and pay for his college tuition for the entire year. Simply can't do that now. And in fact, when I went to school, my folks were able to pay for my education, and they did. When my daughter went to school, my daughter's 37 now, we could pay for about half of it. And the same thing with my son. And they had to pick up the rest in student loans. If that 6 mil levy goes away, it's going to drive up tuition costs, and it's going to take away opportunity from so many kids. And it's going to take away opportunity for businesses, and it's going to take away opportunity for our economy to be able to expand in the 21st century that we live. And so I think it's very foundational to affordable education at the higher level and move forward. And I would just tell the students, tell the story, because they live it every day. Professors could be looked at as saying, well, you're just doing this because, you know, you're getting paid. It's your job. The fact is the kids, the students, the folks, the young adults who are going to college right now, they're the ones that are going to have to pay their debt. And debt takes away opportunity. It takes away opportunity where you want to live. It takes opportunity whether you're going to buy a house or a car or whether you're going to be able to take a vacation or not once you're in the workforce. So we need to do what we can do. It is really my generation's duty to them to make sure we can do what they can do to make college affordable. And right now, I will tell you that if we don't have the 6 mil levy, it's going to price a lot of kids out of college. And we need to be working in the opposite direction, not in that direction.
Absolutely. Well, Senator Tester, thank you very much for your time and all your insight and wisdom on these topics.
I appreciate the opportunity, Justin. You guys have a great week.
Remember that A New Angle is brought to you by First Security Bank and Blackfoot Communications, two great Montana corporations dedicated to cool people doing awesome things.
I'm Maureen Dowd of the New York Times, and you're listening to A New Angle.
Okay, so thanks to the senator for generously spending some time with us. It was interesting to hear how deep education and public education runs in his heritage throughout his family, and how important to him education is in developing critical thinking and leadership skills. That was interesting and pretty compelling. So we're going to transition now to the other side of the political aisle. But a different perspective on higher education with Congressman Greg Gianforte. As you know, before Congressman Greg Gianforte was a politician, he was a hugely successful entrepreneur in the tech space. And that experience and that success, I think, has shaped his worldview in a lot of ways toward the role of education. Anyway, I don't want to speak for the congressman. He speaks very well for himself. So we'll turn it over to our 15 minutes with Greg Gianforte. Okay, so we're here today with Congressman Greg Gianforte. Congressman, thank you for coming on the podcast.
Justin, my pleasure.
So you have been a tremendous supporter of higher education in our state. In fact, you recently gave the naming gift for the School of Computing at Montana State University. Is that right?
It is. You know, I think education is a path forward for a lot of young people. It's the way we develop skills and prepare them for the future.
Yeah. And so along those lines, I'd love to just pick your brain on the role of higher education here in the state of Montana. In particular, what do you see the role of higher education being for creating future leaders in our society?
Well, I think that, you know, one of the things that's been real passion for me is entrepreneurship. Mm-hmm. And I lecture on entrepreneurship in a lot of our high schools and on college campuses. And I'm always surprised when I ask the question of young people and students, how many of you have ever thought of starting your own business? Because at the end of the day, I believe that government doesn't create jobs. It's the private sector that does. Mm-hmm. Businesses are created by entrepreneurs, and it's the businesses that create the jobs that allow Montanans and all of us to prosper. So it's an area that's been a focus for me. I'd say that the second area is really in the area of technology. Of course, I'm a little bit of a geek. I'm an electrical engineer by training.
Sure.
And have started a number of businesses. But I've been encouraged by some things I've seen in other states. Wyoming, for example, just made computer science a requirement in high school. And I personally think computers are here to stay. It's incredibly important that we start integrating technology. This is why I was pleased to partner with U of M. I'm taking my congressional hat off for a little bit to provide some additional lecturers for the computer science department there.
Absolutely.
To start to build cross-disciplinary technology. I think a lawyer with a minor in computer science or a forester with a minor in computer science is just going to be better suited for the workforce.
So along those lines, what sorts of, you know, it seems to me that we need to change the way we're delivering education here a little bit at University of Montana, but more broadly, how do we adapt to meet the needs of the workplace and prepare students to be entrepreneurial?
Well, one of the things I've learned is that I don't, it's very hard to teach entrepreneurship right in the classroom. It's really experiential. And where I've seen success around the country has been where there are more practicums. Maybe these are projects that are combined with undergraduate or associate degree programs where people go out and at the end of the day, starting a business is not complicated. It's very hard, but it's not complicated. It involves making something, either a product or service, selling it to a customer for money, and charging more than it costs you to build it or mm-hmm. deliver it. We end up making it way more complicated. And somehow, at an earlier age, both at a college level and I think even back into the high school level, we've got to provide some of those experiences for our young people so they can be at least – not everyone's going to be an entrepreneur, but it'd be nice to provide that exposure so young people could at least get some idea of what it's about.
Right. It seems like there's two sides to that. There's the idea. So what is the process through which you can generate an idea? But also the other side is, does the idea pencil out? So these experiences are maybe opportunities to create learning on both sides of that.
There's a program that I found down in Texas. It's run by a school down there. They call it the Children's Business Fair. And they start with six-year-olds. And the interesting thing about starting with kids that are so young is they haven't learned that things are impossible yet.
Right.
And they tell these young people, I mean, if you asked a six-year-old, hey, go climb the tree, they'd climb the tree. If you said jump in the lake, they'd jump in the lake. If you say to them, hey, do you want to start a business? They say, sure, let's go do that. They don't know that it's hard. And what they found over the last 8 or 9 years they've been running this program is these kids make something with their own hands. They sell it to others for real money, and they charge more than it makes. And there's no adult supervision.
Right.
And some of these kids make hundreds or thousands of dollars in the weekend that they do this. And they've got that seed of an experience that they can take forward with them. I think there's more of that we could do here in Montana.
Yeah, and along those lines, I mean, I'm going to presume something. You've experienced a big cultural change, having gone from being a hugely successful entrepreneur in your own right to a member of Congress, moving into an institution that maybe doesn't move as fast as the organizations you worked for previously. How do we, along those lines, how do we as a university, you know, as an institution, make change faster. And what I mean by that is we have to be nimble in order to create these sorts of experiential opportunities you're talking about. Are there ways that we can change as an institution to be able to do that better?
Well, I think most change is affected by individuals. You know, there's an old saying that if you ask a committee to design a horse, you end up with a camel.
Right.
And that's part of the issue, that there is a human beings, we all of us, including myself, we tend to be resistant to change. And I just had a chance to meet with your new president recently, and I was, you know, very, very encouraged. I mean, the Regents, I think, showed some real foresight in picking someone who is outside the box, who will be a real change agent. Because for any, having run many organizations in my professional career, change is hard. And yet, I think everyone at an objective level would say, hey, maybe U of M needs to refocus a little bit so that they can start to grow and prosper again. But that's going to be really hard.
Yeah, although going back to your example of the kids that you worked with in that program in Texas, so capturing students and getting them to engage and trying to prevent them from becoming calcified in their cynicism. You know, how do we, you know what I mean? Like, how do we kind of keep the younger generation engaged and hopeful that institutions like UM, institutions like Congress can make meaningful change?
Well, I think one of the things is we've got to make sure that we have open and honest debate. And one of the things that troubles me is when we have a free exchange of ideas, I think everyone wins, even if we don't agree. But we have a tendency, and I would say this exists on both extremes, both conservative and liberal, that when someone starts to present a position that's unlike our own, there is a tendency to go to name calling.
Right.
Just because someone doesn't agree with you does not make them a racist. And I think we have a responsibility within our communities, within high schools, on college campuses, and in the workplace to respect the diversity of view without degenerating into name-calling.
Absolutely. Yeah. Seems to shut down debate instantly if you go to name-calling.
It's not a way to find common ground. And that's from my own experience in business. We started this little business in our home in Bozeman, and we in the final 5 or 6 years, we were negotiating about 1,000 significant contracts with our customers every 90 days.
Wow!
And in many cultures, in Asia and Europe and all over the U.S., and I spent the bulk of my time on the road visiting with customers. And you walk into one of these engagements not knowing the individuals on the other side, knowing that they come from very often very different backgrounds. And in our case, we were negotiating software contracts, but you get very good at listening and making sure you hear what's a win for them, and then trying to accommodate in ways that don't violate your own principles and also are beneficial for you. And I think this has been the bulk of my professional experience, has been in negotiating these agreements. And boy, for my own part back in Washington, I've been trying to reach out across the aisle and build relationships so there is a basis there to at least have a healthy conversation. Not that two people are going to agree on everything, but without the relationship, again, it tends to degenerate into name calling.
Right, without being able to have the conversation, absolutely. So,
yes.
You know, as we kind of look forward to November, I know you have a big race coming up in November, but we also have a race that's important to the university system here in Montana, and that is the 6 mil levy vote. It's been approved every 10 years since 1948 as an important funding mechanism for the university system here. Do you have any advice for us as a successful campaigner yourself as to how the university system can make a better campaign asking for taxpayer money this way?
Well, I think, you know, this is how we've supplemented funding for education in Montana for a very long time. I think you have to, you know, features don't sell, benefits sell. And I think if you think about parents who end up, by and large, there are certainly exceptions, by and large, are writing the check. This is the way that we keep cost of higher education lower, and they want to see results. I know as I've traveled the state, parents that send their young man or woman off to school and pay the bill for 4 years or 6 years or whatever it takes, have some expectation that that education is going to produce a young person who has a brighter future, that can get a job that's going to allow them to pursue their own American dream, whatever that happens to be. Mm-hmm. And I think in certain cases, that case hasn't always been made. I think parents also here in the state would love to have their grandkids around. And if we keep graduating young people and the only jobs available are out of the state, boy, that's harder to do. So I would encourage it to appeal to the benefits. It certainly here is this funding is allows education to be more affordable, which is a benefit to all Montana families.
Access, absolutely. Well, Congressman, thank you very much for your time. We appreciate your insights, and best of luck in the future.
Okay, thank you. And I just want to conclude by saying it's an honor to be the lone voice in the U.S. House for all of Montana. And if people have issues with the federal government, please reach out to my office. The website's just gianforte.house.gov, and I'm here to serve.
Absolutely. That's just what we did. We reached out, and we heard back from your staff very, very quickly. Thanks very much.
You're welcome.
All right, so it was neat to hear both sides of the aisle there, but positive endorsements for higher education or positive sentiments toward higher education from two very different perspectives, but nice to see some common ground there. That's inspiring. All right, so now we'll turn it over to the economist, Bryce Ward, for his thinking on the returns to higher education in general, but also how the words of the senator and the congressman resonated with him. So I'll turn it over to Bryce Ward. Okay, so I'm here today with Bryce Ward. Bryce, you are the first return guest on A New Angle. Thanks for coming back.
Wow, I feel special.
We didn't scare you away.
No, not at all.
Yeah, so you've heard the thoughts of Senator Tester and Congressman Gianforte on funding for higher education. And any responses in general to those two commentaries?
I thought they had interesting perspectives that were different.
Yeah.
But both are certainly within the realm of what people who do research on the effects of education or higher education tend to find. So there's Tester was more about kind of critical thinking and
yep.
experience and, kind of making a whole person or something like that, I think is mm-hmm. what he said. Gianforte was much more about, this is productive and valuable. And they're both the perspectives of education that you hear. So it's nice to hear them both be put out there. And it's also good that both are also true, right? We don't have to choose from, it's not just one is right and one is wrong. I think both are correct.
Yeah, that was particularly refreshing to get politicians on either side of the aisle to sort of both be talking in terms of things that are supported by the evidence. And so that's why I wanted to kind of get your thoughts on all of this. Funding for higher education and the six-mill levy in particular coming up in the fall, just kind of getting a sense for what the research shows us as to return. You and I have spoken about returns to higher education, but I wanted to get into, is there anything known about returns to higher education investment here in the state of Montana?
Sure. So last time, I think we talked mostly about kind of what I'll call private returns or individual returns. And mm-hmm. those are great, but they don't always auger for why does the public need to get involved,
yeah.
right? So the real question is well, what are the things that might break down or where might the failure be if we just had an entirely private system, right? So why do we want to put public money into education? Why do we put public money into education? Or what are the returns to society that we get?
Sure.
And there's the research on private returns is much larger, but there is a literature that seeks to try and expand, investigate. Okay, well, what are the spillover benefits and costs, if any, to investments in higher education? And basically, the literature has looked at things like, so the standard is kind of economic output and productivity. Right?
Okay.
So while putting more, while you getting a college education makes you more productive, it turns out that you being more productive makes other people more productive.
Sure. Contagion
right?
effect.
It's sure. contagion effect. And, one very famous study by a guy named Enrico Moretti, who's a professor at Berkeley, he finds that for every 1 percentage point increase in the share of college graduates within a community, mm-hmm. wages for people without high school degrees or with only high school degrees go up by, I think it's 1.8 and 1.6%.
Wow.
And then other college graduates benefit by like a fraction of a percent.
Okay.
Right. So those are the spillover benefits, yep. right? And, you know, he's done a bunch of follow-up work, which kind of gets really micro, right? Like one thing he did was look at plants, right? So go look at factories.
Like manufacturing plants.
Yeah, sorry. Sorry. You know, not pots.
Yeah, not plants in the ground.
You know, manufacturing facilities.
Got it.
And, you know, go find similar manufacturing facilities across different communities and then ask what happens to productivity at those over time when the share of educated people changes in that community.
Sure.
And it turns out that factories in places that get more educated become more productive.
Okay.
And at the even more micro level, they literally tracked like, I think it was like maybe salespeople on a floor. And they, you know, where you were spaced in the store.
Okay.
Right. And, you know, they looked at how close you were to the most productive person, and the people who worked closer to the person who was more productive became more productive themselves.
Wow.
Right. So there's lots of spillover.
Yeah. What
benefits.
Kind of mechanisms?
There's some hypotheses of, you know, some of it's just about observation.
Sure. Yeah.
Some of it is about just social pressure.
Mm-hmm.
Like I see this other person doing well. I feel like I need to do better.
Yeah.
So those are, I think, the two is like, there's kind of a social, like, you know, oh, hey, I need to do better.
Yeah, like impression management of some kind.
Yeah, and the other is I just learn, right? Like, oh,
yeah.
What's he doing or what's she doing?
Yeah.
They're doing well, you know. And so, you know, so there's those kinds of spillovers that we think we've observed. But it's not just about, you know, kind of standard. It's worth finishing up. You know, all those wage increases, including just the private returns and me being more educated, you know, that means there's more money in our economy. And then ultimately there's a return that pays back the investment.
Sure.
Right. And then again, I haven't done anything for Montana, but there are two studies, one in Texas and one in California. And one kind of looked at every state, although at a career level. And, you know, the implied returns, and there's some, we could get into a bunch of weeds in the technical details here, but broadly these studies find very large rates of return to social investment in higher education or public mm-hmm. investment in higher education, mm-hmm. right? Like double digits, right?
Yeah.
So one study, which is a decade old, but did have a Montana line in it, said that the rate of return, just in terms of the tax base.
Sure.
The tax base rate of return on investments in higher education, I think, was 19%.
Wow.
So, you know, there's that kind of standard, you know, increase the size of the economy stuff. But there's also stuff about saving money, right?
Mm-hmm.
When people who become more educated are less likely to commit crimes. Crime is very costly social, you know, there's lots of what we call negative spillovers or negative externalities with crime. So to the extent that education causally, and there's some evidence to believe it's causal, although it's, you know, not a super large literature. To the extent that education helps reduce crime, you know, those are benefits. To the extent that education helps make people healthy, saves the money because we pay for a lot of healthcare. To the extent that education makes people better parents, right? We end up spending less money on their kids because their kids are less likely, you know, more likely to become educated themselves and less likely to get into trouble.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, there's all these other savings that come along with it. And then, you know, these were the Texas and California studies where they tried to actually capitalize both the wage stuff as well as the cost saving stuff.
Uh-huh.
And the number in both Texas and California were about the same. You know, in Texas it was $4 returned on every dollar invested, and in California it was $3.65 returned on every dollar
invested. That's pretty amazing.
So you know, higher ed has pretty big, pretty substantial returns, and you know, so that's why ultimately, you know, you tend to observe this, and you tend to have support for you know, some level of public involvement in higher ed.
So, you know, I feel like we did like a little micro, I'm not a micro, a Freakonomics special micro episode there. It's
the shortest one ever.
Yeah, well done. So, you know, the next piece of this is kind of storytelling, right? So how do, you know, if we as an institution want the public to support us,
more readily, and we don't get a lot of public support here at University of Montana. How do we make a better case? How do we tell our story better? How do we take those compelling empirical results and translate them into stories that would appeal to a taxpayer?
It's tough, right? Because a lot of these are...
Or a potential student and a family looking at putting their first, you know, child through college or something like that.
Yeah. I mean, the storytelling piece is much easier at the individual level, right? And that's what you hear, right?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I think Gene Forte told his story, maybe alluded to an individual kind of story of, mm-hmm. you know, and actually Tester did too, right? He went off, he got his degree in music and, you know, it made him a whole person, I think,
right.
Something like that. You know, so that's the easy story to tell. I mean, it's really hard to say, well, it's a 1% increase in wages for other people. Like, you know, I mean, you know, and we avoid some crime. I mean, people are really bad at, you know, the not observed counterfactual, right? The fact that something yeah. that would have occurred didn't, right?
Right.
That is something that people have really hard times getting their brains around. Mm-hmm. So storytelling in that regard is difficult, right? We, you know, we can put out the numbers and people can look at the numbers, and some people who are more, inclined to think like that, they might get some story out of it. But, you know, I mean, the harder thing is to tell that big aggregate social story. You know, it's essentially getting people to try and think about the question of, well, what does Montana look like with weaker higher education institutions, right? And again, even with the 6 mil levy, we're not saying that the universities would go away,
right?
We're talking about losing like 10% of mm-hmm. funding, which of course is non-trivial and would actually have, you know, potentially large impacts on enrollment and
yep.
opportunity. You know, and that's the other, I think that's the other piece of the social return, which isn't kind of standard costs and benefits and the kind of aggregate, just, oh, we have more money here and we have less money here. But there, you know, to the extent there's a social benefit, or, you know, we as a society ascribe a benefit to opportunity. You know, that tends to be, I think, the story that you tell, which is, you know, if you raise tuition, it will decrease enrollment
yeah.
In the universities in Montana. And it will, it's all from in-state, because presumably out-of-state tuition isn't super tight. I mean, maybe it's that in some way, but, you know, it's going to be, you're closing the door on an opportunity for, you know, some set of Montanans at the margin of going to college.
Right.
Right. And, you know, to the extent that we don't want to foreclose that opportunity, to the extent that we want people to have the, at least the choice to go and pursue this particular avenue for their life and pursue all the private returns and the spillover social benefits, you know, that's some of the stuff I think we don't want to necessarily. I mean, that's the more compelling story that's easier to tell.
Yeah, that closing the door language, you know, it's negatively framed, but it's a pretty powerful kind of metaphor to think about it.
Yeah, I mean, we know that many individuals have told their story, right, about how they feel. And, you know, I think I talked about this maybe on the last one. 90% of people who graduate from college say that it was worth it, right? And it was worth it in terms
regardless of the level of debt,
worth it given what you paid for it.
Yeah. Given what you paid for it. Yeah.
Right. So, you know, for most people, either they're hardwired to tell themselves that it was worth it, because otherwise why did they do it?
Sure.
But, you know, if we don't be wonky about it, we just kind of say, well, look, people are telling us that we should kind of take them at face value.
Sure.
You know, that suggests that there really is value to individuals. And if we erect higher barriers, we kind of take those opportunities away from some people.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it seems like an undesirable thing to do as a society, at least from my personal perspective.
Yeah. And, you know, I can certainly, I can't explicitly agree with you, because on this podcast, we have to be agnostic with regard to the 6 mil levy. But what we can do is encourage everyone to vote, to get out there and vote in November. And that's one thing that, you know, you and I have worked together on, voter turnout. And so, Bryce, thanks for sharing with us some thoughts on the 6 mil levy, on funding for higher education, and just being the first return customer.
Happy to be here. Right. Thanks, Justin.
Until next time.
Okay, I hope you enjoyed that conversation about the 6 mil levy in higher education. And all I can say is get out there and vote. We're getting down to the wire. We got a week to go. So please get out there and vote next Tuesday. And speaking of next Tuesday, we're going to bring you a special one, Maureen Dowd. I got the chance to speak with Maureen during her recent visit to Montana and excited to bring that to you on Election Day. See you then. Remember that A New Angle was brought to you by CED, Consolidated Electrical Distributors. By now, you've been listening long enough to know that these guys are big and that they sell pretty much everything electrical you would ever need, but you might not know that they hire a ton of University of Montana students. If you want to learn more about careers at CED, visit cedcareers.com. It's a great website name. Before we go, I want to thank some important peeps. Comzar, Elizabeth Willey, interns, Aspen Runkle, Mason Dow, and Max Gibson. Huge thanks to VTO for the tunes, and finally props to Jeff Meese, our master of all things sound. Before we go, if you have any questions, suggestions, comments, insults, whatever, please email me at anewangle@umontana.edu. Help us spread the word, and be sure to use the hashtag anewangle when you do. Thanks a lot. See you next time.